This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of shoulder periprosthetic fracture from the shoulder and elbow section on orthobullets.com. So starting with a quick summary, shoulder periprosthetic fractures are intraoperative or postoperative complications associated with shoulder arthroplasty that can lead to loosening and migration of the prosthesis. Diagnosis can be made with plain radiographs of the shoulder and humerus. CT scan can help identify loosening of the prosthesis. Treatment involves ORIF or revision shoulder arthroplasty depending on the location of the fracture and stability of the prosthesis. Now let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology, as far as the incidence of shoulder periprosthetic fractures, these make up 0.6 to 3% of patients with total shoulder arthroplasty. As far as the demographics, these injuries typically occur in patients 50 to 85 years of age. In terms of timing of onset, most fractures often occur intraoperatively at the time of the original implant. This consists of 20% of all complications. As far as the anatomic location of shoulder periprosthetic fractures, these injuries are typically adjacent to the prosthetic stem tip and the greater tuberosity, which most commonly occurs during revision total shoulder arthroplasty. Risk factors include soft tissue contractures, osteoporosis, endosteal notching, aggressive reaming, incorrect entry reaming site, and keep in mind that the ideal entry reaming site is 9 millimeters lateral from the anatomic center of rotation. Other risk factors include use of press-fit humeral stems compared to cemented stems, revision arthroplasty cases, history of instability, female sex, post-traumatic arthritis, increased comorbidity index, and osteonecrosis. And know that corticosteroid-induced osteonecrosis happens more commonly than alcoholic and post-traumatic causes of osteonecrosis. Now let's talk about the etiology. With respect to the pathophysiology, intraoperative fractures occur most often during revision total shoulder arthroplasty. Know that greater exposure is required during these procedures. There's also increased scarring in the subacromial space and around the rotator cuff. Therefore, there is increased soft tissue retraction and greater torque placed on the humerus. Removing the previous implant encompasses up to 81% of intraoperative fractures. Metaphyseal filling implants have an increased risk of greater tuberosity fractures. This is because there is bone loss from cement removal and bone loss from disengagement of the bone implant interface. Diaphyseal engaging stems result in greater tuberosity fractures. This is secondary to stress shielding of the metaphysis. Methods to prevent intraoperative fractures include clearing soft tissue from the lateral portion of the implant, use of implant-specific removal instruments, and controlled corticotomy. Other mechanisms of intraoperative fractures include reaming or broaching, which encompasses up to 31% of intraoperative fracture, implant trialing or insertion, which encompasses up to 19% of cases, and during exposure, which encompasses up to 15% of cases. And this is usually due to forceful retractor placement. Primary total shoulder arthroplasty has a lower risk for intraoperative fracture. Factors associated with primary intraoperative fractures include endosteal notching from reaming, excessive humeral external rotation during exposure, and cortical breaching during reaming or broaching. Primary intraoperative fractures are especially prevalent in osteopenic bone. Postoperative fractures can occur as a result of a fall or fatigue fracture through a stress riser. This can be from a fall on an outstretched hand in which the tip of the prosthesis acts as a stress riser. Most postoperative fractures as a result occur at or adjacent to the tip of the prosthesis stem. Postoperative fractures can also be atraumatic due to prosthetic loosening, specifically cortical weakening from the implant rattling inside the medullary canal. Also know that shoulder periprosthetic fractures have a high risk of non-union, as the prosthesis disrupts the endosteal blood supply, impairing fracture revascularization and healing. Also know that the prosthetic stem distracts the two fragments, preventing end-to-end healing. Associated conditions with shoulder periprosthetic fracture include non-union, especially in the setting of osteoporosis, rheumatoid arthritis, female sex, displacement of greater than 2 millimeters, and or presence of cement at the fracture site. Now let's talk about the classification of shoulder periprosthetic fracture. And the one to know is the Wright and Cofield classification. And this is broken down into three types: type A, type B, and type C. Type A is characterized with the fracture centered near the tip of the stem and extends proximally. Type B is also characterized with the fracture centered near the tip of the stem and extends proximally, however, extends less proximally than type A. and type C is characterized with the fracture located distal to the tip of the stem. Moving on to the presentation of shoulder periprosthetic fracture, patients will typically have a history of a mechanical fall secondary to a fall on an outstretched hand and worsening arm pain, and these patients present with mechanical loosening of the prosthesis. Common symptoms include acute pain in the upper arm, and prodromal pain may be present in patients with mechanically loose implants. These patients may also present with a gross deformity. On physical exam, inspection may reveal varus or valgus deformity, ecchymosis and swelling, shortening of the affected arm, and diffuse tenderness of the upper arm. In terms of motion assessment, the patient may not be able to move the affected elbow or shoulder. This is most often due to pain. On neurovascular exam, make sure to examine for radial nerve status, as there is a high incidence of radial nerve palsy with distal humerus fractures. This is most often a neuropraxia and does not require operative management. It's important that you document full neurological and vascular findings. Moving on to imaging, radiographs should include orthogonal radiographs of the affected humerus and should include an AP, axillary lateral, a Grashi view, as well as scapular Y views. Findings may include a fracture involving the prosthetic stem tip, usually in an oblique pattern. The criteria dictating treatment includes the appearance of stem stability and zones of lucency around the stem, which can suggest lack of bone ingrowth or osteolysis. CT is indicated when there's a concern for loose prosthesis, specifically when the fracture pattern on the radiographs are concerning for mechanical instability of the humeral stem, as well as prodromal pain consistent with mechanical loosening. Other indications for a CT is in the setting of comminution. Be sure to perform the CT with a metal suppression protocol, so there is decreased artifact from the prosthesis. Assessment of the CT should determine fracture morphology, assessing remaining bone stock, quality of the rotator cuff muscle, as well as version of the glenoid if revision is determined necessary. Moving on to treatments for shoulder periprosthetic fracture, this can be treated non-operatively or operatively. Non-operative management includes immobilization, which is indicated for a long, oblique, or spiral type A or B fracture with a stable prosthesis. Immobilization can also be used in the setting of a type C fracture. In terms of outcomes, union rates are less than 50% with immobilization. Operative treatment can include conversion to a prosthetic stem spanning the fracture site by two cortical diameters. This is indicated for intraoperative type A fractures. Other options include conversion to a proximally porous-coated long-stem prosthesis spanning the fracture site by two or three cortical diameters. This is indicated for intraoperative type B fractures and intraoperative type C fractures. Other options include an open reduction and internal fixation. Indications include a type C intraoperative fracture that is unamenable to long-stem prosthesis. This is also indicated for postoperative fractures, specifically transverse type A and B fractures with a stable prosthesis, or a type C fracture that has failed non-surgical management, and in patients that are unable to tolerate non-operative management. Finally, another surgical option is revision arthroplasty with supplementary fixation. This is indicated in the presence of a loose prosthesis with any fracture type. A long-stem prosthesis should be used in the setting of poor bone stock and should bypass the fracture by two cortical diameters. A short-stem prosthesis should be used in the setting of good bone stock, and you can also convert to a shorter stem prosthesis than the original and apply supplementary fixation. Now, let's talk about some of these management techniques in a bit more detail. Immobilization typically involves a coaptation splint followed by functional bracing. Hydrostatic pressure created by the brace stabilizes the fracture site. However, keep in mind that there is a higher risk of non-union with type A and B fractures. If you choose conversion to a prosthetic stem spanning the fracture site by two cortical diameters, you will first remove the original stem, and then placement of a longer stem engages the distal fragment and improves fracture alignment. This can be used with or without supplementary fixation, depending on fracture stability. If you choose conversion to a proximally porous-coated long-stem prosthesis spanning the fracture site by 2 to 3 cortical diameters, remember that the proximal porous coating allows for metaphyseal stability. In this option, the distal fragment is cemented to the stem tip. In terms of techniques, you will pack cement into the distal canal to allow for distal stem fixation, avoid proximal cement extrusion into the fracture site, use cortical strut grafting with cerclage cables in cases of bone deficiency, and the olecranon fossa may prevent successful treatment with this method. In the setting of an open reduction and internal fixation, approaches can include the anterolateral approach to the humerus or the posterolateral approach. In the anterolateral approach to the humerus, this can be extended from the deltopectoral approach used for the index procedure. This will be done from the tip of the coracoid process, curving along the deltopectoral groove, and then continuing the incision along the lateral border of the biceps brachii. You will then develop the interval between the biceps and the brachialis muscle, divide the brachialis muscle longitudinally at the midline and elevate subperiosteally to expose the distal aspect of the humerus, and keep in mind that the medial fibers are innervated by the musculocutaneous nerve and the lateral fibers are innervated by the radial nerve. Make sure that you preserve as much soft tissue attachment to the humerus as possible. Finally, you will place the appropriate sized plate. Usually this is a 4.5 millimeter LC-DCP plate. Then you will provide screw fixation distal to the stem and cerclage cables proximal to the stem tip. The posterolateral approach is good for distal postoperative fracture with a stable prosthesis. Greater tuberosity and calcar fractures should be fixed with suture or cable fixation. Hybrid locking plates with cerclage cables have been used for postoperative fractures. The plate is placed eccentrically on the humerus to allow locking screws to miss the humeral stem, and this allows bicortical fixation around the stem. Use of cerclage cables are added for stability. Alternatively, you can use a dual plate construct or 3.5 millimeter attachment plates for bicortical fixation. You can also combine with allograft augmentation for fractures with deficient cortices, and you can use a cortical strut allograft and fix with cerclage cables. Remember that two hemicylinders can be used to form a sarcophagus around the prosthesis. Finally, if you choose revision arthroplasty with supplementary fixation, the type of revision prosthesis is dependent on the quality of bone stock. In the setting of poor bone stock, you will convert to a long stem prosthesis. This will bypass the fracture site by at least 2 to 3 cortical diameters and can be augmented with allograft to enhance the bone stock. In the setting of good bone stock, you can convert to a short stem prosthesis where the stem ends more proximal than the original prosthesis. You can then apply supplementary fixation to the fracture site, and remember that shorter stem implants prevent the stem tip from distracting the fracture site. Some complications to be aware of in the setting of a shoulder periprosthetic fracture include non-union, delayed union, glenohumeral stiffness, and radial nerve injury, which can be secondary from the fracture, or iatrogenic from fixation with cerclage cables. Remember that placement of cable fixation should be 4 centimeters distal from the latissimus dorsi insertion. In terms of prognosis for shoulder periprosthetic fractures, there are high union rates when appropriately treated, and the time to union is typically 2 to 8 months. However, keep in mind that these patients experience significant decrease in shoulder range of motion. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 69-year-old patient presents with a periprosthetic fracture involving the metadiaphyseal region of the humerus with a reverse total shoulder arthroplasty implant. A deltopectoral approach is used for open reduction and internal fixation of the fracture. Which of the following is the most likely complication that might occur when cable fixation is placed 4 centimeters inferior to the insertion of the latissimus dorsi? And the choices are 1, iatrogenic median nerve injury, 2, axillary nerve neuropraxia, 3, subscapularis tendon injury, 4, iatrogenic radial nerve injury, and 5, incarceration of the brachial artery. The correct answer to this question is 4, iatrogenic radial nerve injury. So the patient is presenting with a periprosthetic humerus fracture that will require cerclage fixation, which can cause iatrogenic radial nerve injury when placed 4 centimeters inferior to the latissimus dorsi insertion. Postoperative periprosthetic humerus fractures are relatively rare complications but pose treatment challenges due to the poor vascular supply at the vascular site due to the prosthetic tip. Surgically treating these fractures requires a cable plate construct in stable implants and revision to a long stem prosthesis in loose implants. Open reduction and internal fixation can potentially cause an iatrogenic radial nerve injury if the cables incarcerate the nerve when passed 4 centimeters distal from the inferior aspect of the latissimus dorsi insertion, which is the entrance to the spiral groove. Fu et al. Performed a cadaveric study looking at the relationship of the radial nerve as it passes into the spiral groove through a deltopectoral approach. The authors found that the radial nerve entered the proximal spiral groove approximately 13 centimeters from the coracoid process, 10 centimeters from the distal lesser tuberosity, and 8 centimeters from the superior latissimus dorsi insertion, and 4 centimeters from the inferior latissimus dorsi insertion. The authors concluded that the placement of a cerclage cable just inferior to the latissimus dorsi insertion will safely avoid an iatrogenic radial nerve palsy. Bosali et al. Performed a systematic review of the literature regarding complications following shoulder arthroplasty. The authors reported an overall complication rate of 11%, with periprosthetic fractures most frequently occurring intraoperatively for both anatomic and reverse shoulder arthroplasties. Postoperative periprosthetic fractures accounted for 6.6% and 1.2% of all complications in reverse and anatomic arthroplasties, respectively. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, the median nerve is located in the medial septum just lateral to the brachial artery, making it less disposable to a cable injury. Answer 2, the axillary nerve is proximal from where the cerclage cable would be inserted and would unlikely be affected. Answer 3, the subscapularis tendon is much more proximal than the latissimus dorsi insertion and would be relatively safe from cable placement. And finally, answer 5, the brachial artery is more superficial and anteromedial, posing less risk from cable incarceration. And moving on to the final question. A 60-year-old patient fell down a flight of stairs and injured their right arm. Since the fall, they are unable to move their extremity due to pain. Prior to the fall, the patient denied any pain in the shoulder or upper arm. Currently, the patient is neurovascularly intact. AP and lateral radiographs at the time of the presentation demonstrate a right and cofield type B periprosthetic humeral shaft fracture. What is the best treatment option for this patient? And the choices are 1, revision, reverse total shoulder arthroplasty with cemented long stem prosthesis, 2, revision, reverse total shoulder arthroplasty with cementless long stem prosthesis, 3, ORIF with hybrid locking plate and cerclage cables, 4, ORIF with lag screw fixation and neutralization plating, and 5, non-operative treatment. The correct answer to this question is 3, ORIF with hybrid locking plate and cerclage cables. So the patient has sustained a right and cofield type B periprosthetic humeral shaft fracture with a stable prosthesis. The best treatment option for this would involve ORIF with hybrid locking plate and cable construct. Periprosthetic humeral shaft fractures are a relatively rare complication occurring in approximately 0.6 to 3% of patients that have undergone shoulder replacement procedures. These fractures pose treatment challenges as the prosthesis disrupts endosteal blood supply, causing higher non-union rates. Fractures can be classified using the Wright and Cofield system. Type A fractures are proximal to the stem tip and are treated with ORIF. Type B fractures are at the level of the stem tip and are treated with ORIF. And type C fractures are distal to the stem tip and can be initially treated non-operatively. Kurowicki et al. Performed a case series of 7 patients with Wright and Cofield type B periprosthetic humeral shaft fractures treated with open reduction internal fixation without implant revision. Internal fixation consisted of a lateral hybrid plate with skiving locking screws and cerclage cables proximally and cortical as well as locking screws distally. All patients treated achieved radiographic union. Campbell et al. Performed a retrospective analysis on 21 periprosthetic humeral shaft fractures that occurred either intraoperatively or postoperatively, 16 of which were intraoperative fractures. The authors found that fractures with a stable intramedullary fixation and combined supplementary fixation had had superior results with regards to union, complications, and rehabilitation compared to loose stem fixation with or without supplementary fixation. Steinman et al. Reviewed the treatment of periprosthetic humeral shaft fractures. For intraoperative fractures, the authors recommended placement of a long stem prosthesis that bypasses the fracture site by at least 2 cortical diameters. For postoperative type A and B fractures, treatment depends on whether the stem is loose or well fixed. Loose prostheses necessitate revision long stem component with supplementary fixation, whereas well-fixed stems require hybrid plate fixation. Type C fractures can be treated non-operatively, but in the presence of non-union may require plate fixation with or without allograft struts. Anderson et al. In 2013 performed a retrospective cohort study on 36 patients with periprosthetic humeral shaft fractures, of which 17 were treated with ORIF and 19 underwent revision arthroplasty. Revision arthroplasty was performed when a prosthesis was determined to be loose at the time of surgical treatment. All patients treated with ORIF alone and 18 out of 19 patients with revision arthroplasty achieved radiographic union. 14 patients experienced complications, 7 were in each group. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, Answer 1. In the setting of a loose prosthesis, revision arthroplasty with a long stem implant would be the ideal choice. Cement fixation can be utilized in the presence of osteoporotic bone, but care must be taken to prevent cement extrusion into the fracture site. In this case, the stem is well fixed and revision arthroplasty is unnecessary. Answer 2. Revision arthroplasty is indicated in a loose stem, but in this case, the stem is well fixed. Answer 4. Lag screw fixation is not recommended with these fractures. Current data suggests good outcomes with hybrid locking plates and cerclage cables. And finally, answer 5, type C fractures may be amenable to non-operative treatment. However, when there is involvement near the stem tip, there is a high risk of non-union without adequate fixation due to poor endosteal blood flow in this region. That's all for this review about shoulder periprosthetic fractures. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.